All right, gambling should be recognised as a major public health risk in Northern Ireland, a new report has recommended. The Stormont executive has been urged to treat gambling similarly to alcohol and tobacco, with a warning that the whole population is vulnerable to gambling addiction and harm. And whilst, of course, this is a conversation happening in Northern Ireland, I think it certainly is transferable across the entire island. Declan Cregan is training officer at Gambling With Lives and joins us now. Hi, Declan, thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Greg. How's it going?
It's going good. And every time we talk about gambling on this programme, which is relatively frequently, we always get a tranche of text saying, thank you so much for talking about this, that it seems to be, for many, the addiction or the problem that doesn't get talked about enough.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I do feel gambling can sometimes be left behind. Even if you look back to my days in school, there was never really any awareness of gambling, whereas there would be a lot of awareness around tobacco and alcohol, of course, which is very, very well needed. But I think gambling in the past has been, like I say, left behind. But thankfully, now people are starting to be listened to. It's seen now as a major public health issue, and rightly so, because gambling isn't just the usual £50-100 you lose in the bookies or online and you just go home and everything's fine. The problem is it's then what you do after to get that money back, whether it be theft, borrowing from loan companies. You know, there's all different aspects to it. So again, like I say, it doesn't just end after your bed and the boogies are online. There's a lot more implications to that.
But if you talk about the sort of societal attitudes to it, you know, you would never see an advert that says, you know, football's better if you're having a ciggy, or football is better after a line of cocaine, or, you know what I mean, enjoy boxing, you know, and get loaded on booze. Do you know what, yet still, at this stage, that is how we're told. You get the ads that say be gamble aware, but look, at the same time, that's getting the product out there at the same time too. So it's still at this point, you're fighting really the industry, because it is so, particularly in sport, I think, but not exclusively, it's so intrinsic and seen as enhancing what you're watching. We have a long way to go.
Greg, it's a huge way to go. Unfortunately, the gambling industry are still bombarding us all. People in recovery are just your average person. They're bombarding us with adverts, you know, every single day of your life. You even look at the Euros at the moment. I absolutely love sport. Unfortunately, every single advert is even the gamble responsibly ones, they make it like it's fun, that it's just with friends, things like that. But That doesn't show the harm whenever you're sitting in your bedroom alone crying, you know, just the different things like that, the actual hard hitting stuff of gambling, and instead they portray it as a fun pastime. But unfortunately for many, that is not the case.
Yeah, and of course, and as a young person coming up, because we don't really talk about gambling much, and I certainly don't think it's an education, you're exposed to gambling as being fun, a little tipple, betting a throw in. A quid each way in the Grand National, whatever, you know what I mean? And that, of course, is the gateway into potentially having a gambling issue, depending on the person's personality. But really, was that your case? Like, did you start gambling, but there was no counter argument to it? You just believed it to be what maybe a young lad does?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I had a friend got in touch with me. His cousin was over from England. He was a bit older, and I was 16 at this stage. And like, I've came out and said a lot. My first bet was a £1 spin on a roulette machine, winning £7.20. At the age of 16, you win that, and you're like, oh, maybe there is a way forward here for me to make a living off it. Again, like I always say, I was never taught in school either as well of the potential harms and dangers that could come from gambling. So I was quite in the dark, to be totally honest. But I believe as well, when I started on that machine, it was the end for me, because the machine was so highly addictive. It's so hard to describe. And the bookies do these, the gambling industry does this, and it preys on people like myself and a lot of other people. The dopamine hit you're getting from that spin on the roulette machine, or the, you know, just the uncertainty of what's to come next, the levels of dopamine you get is absolutely crazy. So,
and listen, in relation to that, like, well, firstly, from my perspective, I'm not sure if I was addicted to fruit machines, but I worked in London for a couple of years and I put quite a lot of money in fruit machines. And you find yourself watching other people put money in fruit machines. But the one thing I noticed was is that you would cash out a tenner, right? And, you know, and then maybe a fiver. And you'd put that in the fruit machine and then you'd win 8 quid. And you know this thing where everyone's, how did you get on? Well, I won 8 quid. You know what I mean? You'd never, you actually never mentioned the 15. Now, this was very low-level stuff, don't get me wrong. And I'm not even sure if I had an addiction, but it felt like it at the time. But even at that point, and this is going back a long, long time with me, I was actually probably masking what I was doing, either consciously or subconsciously. Can you imagine if I'd have continued down that route where it could have ended up?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, so easy to go down that road. You know, once you have your first bet, there's every chance that you will go down that road, because the industry makes the product so, so addictive. It's so, so accessible. Also, you know, you can go to the bookies until 9 p.m. in the evening, or else when that stops, then you have online. Online is 24/7 casino. If you own a mobile phone, which I would say nearly everybody does, you have a 24-hour casino in your pocket, effectively. So it is very, very difficult for not to go down that road when you do have that first bet and you feel the hit that it gives you.
So you're 16, you put a pound on a roulette machine, you clean up 720, that's how it must have felt at that stage, easy money. Is it really, do we fast forward to your 28 before really the S hits the F?
Yeah, that was kind of the breaking point for me. There was obviously a long period of serious harm in between that. You know, my school life was affected by gambling. But it was whenever I started to start making money, really, that's when the real problem arose. Before that, I was, you know, getting, I heard my mum the other day say I was getting loans at 16 and stuff. I actually forget about as well, because you just put yourself through
protect
that much.
Protect yourself, yeah.
So, you know, at such a young age, you're through that. But then as time went on, then you get a full-time job, you're losing your wage every single week. And in the end, at the company I was working for at the time, I had a £17,500 payout. And I was in a share scheme. And I think it took me a week or two to get through that. And at the time, my partner at the time, she was looking after actually all my bank stuff. So I actually had to find a way to get around that. I didn't have a bank card. So as a gambler, you just find different ways and means to get your hands on the money, you know. So that's when the problem really did arise. But to be honest with you, it was a 12-year struggle. It was a 12-year battle the whole time. And it was very, very difficult. But thankfully, in the end, with a lot of good people around me, I was able to get the help. But unfortunately, not everyone is as lucky as me. And that's why I am trying to be such an advocate now, because unfortunately people have taken their lives due to gambling, and that just should not be happening.
It's the ripple effect. It's the impact on the individual, but relationships, partners, mums and dads, brothers and sisters, often it can be kept secret for a long time. Money disappears and all that kind of stuff. In terms of it being elevated to being seen as a major public health risk, or even a disease, you know, as an addiction, that addiction being a disease, it's not an individual's fault. It pulls you in and it has you then. Like, everything is designed from the very earliest of age now. If you're on your PlayStation and you're playing Fortnite, your young person at home is opening chests. And that is already developing the risk reward. So if you open this chest, how well might you do? That's that seed plant. Put FIFA in, or switch FIFA on, you know, especially now with all the card packs or whatever. You open your pack, are you going to get a 5.4 million rated player? Are you going to get a 100,000 euro player? You'll see the excitement of your child go, yes, I got Ronaldo, or whoever it might be now. All of this is drip, 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 isn't it, Declan? So that by the time you hit 13, 14, 15, that risk reward, that heart stopper, it's all there. The seeds have been planted. You are primed to become a gambler.
Absolutely, Greg. I couldn't agree more. We have when I go around schools and stuff now, I often hear of this case happening a lot, and I don't think this has been done by accident. I think there's obviously a reason behind this, and like you say, it's getting the young people and the risk and reward from an early age. So you can just imagine where this is going to lead to. There's no doubt about it where this is going to lead to in the future. With young people becoming addicted to gambling.
Yeah, the only problem is what you're taking on. You're taking on a multi-million euro industry that's very intertwined with the media, you know, newspapers and what have you, and radio to a lesser extent, greatly supported by it. Radio shows, sports shows funded completely by the gambling industry. The politicians want their day out at Ascot, presumably as guests of William Hill or something. Do you know what I mean? It's a tough battle you have on your hands, Declan.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. It's an extremely tough battle. But for me, I don't want anybody to go through what I went through, my family went through, so many people around me. So I'm prepared to fight. To make, nobody deserves to go through life of misery through gambling, losing their wages every single week. So I'm absolutely prepared to fight. And obviously, sit down and talk to people as well. We can do this together. Things have to be a lot safer because at the minute it is absolutely chronic.
Yep. And the conservative estimate is for Northern Ireland, 2.3% of the population in Northern Ireland, not gambles, has a gambling problem. Is there another 3 or 4% that don't actually realise they have a problem? Who is to say? Okay, Declan, well, listen, it'll be interesting to see how this progresses. It took a long time to get cigarettes off the side of Formula One cars or snooker championships or what have you. Will it work with gambling? Who is to say? But continued success for you in terms of avoiding it and your life in general, Declan. And thanks very much for joining us.
Great, thank you.
Right, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Declan Craigan there, training officer at Gambling With Lives. Now it's time for Wellness Wednesday. We visited this issue early June, but such is the pressure on services, we thought it very worthwhile to return to it again. June, as you may know, is TUSLA's Fostering Awareness Month and is an essential campaign for raising awareness about the ongoing need for foster carers in local communities. On Wellness Wednesday today, we talk to Joanne Ryan, Principal Social Worker. Good morning, Joanne.
Morning, Greg. Thank you for having us on your show.
And we also speak to a little shy foster carer, Anne Callaghan. Hi. Go on, scooch up beside Joanne. She won't bite you. She won't bite you. Come here, both of you. Thank you so very much for joining us. I might start with you, if that's all right, Joanne. What level of demand versus supply issues are we having in terms of finding safe spaces for our children?
Yeah, it is a struggle at the moment, Greg. Like, we're lucky in Donegal. We have absolutely wonderful foster carers. There's 125 foster families here, and that, of course, is made up of single parent families and couples. But we have 219 children in care, and the main demand is, what we really want is that we can place our children from Donegal in their own communities. So they don't, it's traumatic enough, as you can imagine, coming into the care system. But we want them to have the stability of their own school, their own sports clubs, youth clubs. So for us, it's really, really important that we can get their placement near enough to their own community. There is a huge demand, and there's been, we have taken 31 children into our fostering system since January. We have 219, as I said already, children in care in Donegal. And nationally, it is an issue in terms of trying to attract foster carers to support us and provide that loving environment for young people.
As you mentioned, this is a national issue, so I presume there's going to be spaces that become available in Donegal, for an example, that there might be a desperate situation down the country. I presume there are children from down the country also having to come to Donegal when spaces become available, and you have to try and manage those cases.
Unfortunately, Greg, we're not actually able. We get every day. I get calls about placements down the country, but because of the demand in Donegal, we try to prioritise the children here because of what I was saying about trying to keep them in their own community.
Understood.
And lessen the trauma that they've already gone through, and the reasons that they would have had to have come into care in the first place.
An increase of 31 or 31 additional children this year, I think you said.
Yeah.
Is that an unusual high level? Is there something behind that?
It certainly is a spike, which we're surprised at. But I think since COVID, there has been an increase of children coming into the care system for various reasons. And I think, as you're well aware, there's been an increase in alcohol and drug misuse in the communities. And this is impacting on the ability of parents to, you know, give good enough parenting for their children. And often, Greg, we bring children into care only to give mom and dad a chance to really address any issues or problems that they have, because everybody wants the child to return home to their parents.
It's always the best place where possible,
isn't it? And the parents are the best for them. And everybody knows that. But, you know, every family goes through a crisis, goes through a stressful time, and sometimes they just need a break. And also, so that they can address their problems, but also just to say, in terms of being a foster carer, sometimes, like, we have foster carers who might only provide, which is brilliant, maybe a weekend a month. But that can also be a respite placement for a child, you know, who's at home and mum and dad just need a break.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is it measurable, the impact? Because I'm aware of this, and I've kind of hinted at it on air before, but you've kind of said it straight out there. Is the lack of respite resources putting pressure on foster services?
I would say it's more putting pressure on families in the community.
And then the byproduct of that.
We do provide respite for foster carers, because they need a break as well if they need to go away somewhere. But I think what we would love is to have more respite services for parents in the community who would like to be able to obviously keep their children at home, but just need a break at different times in their life because of stress, or because maybe the young person has mental health problems or challenging behaviour. I would say we need a lot more respite places, but we definitely need more general foster cares. And can I just say as well, Greg, if anybody is interested, go to fostering.ie, because it's a wonderful website set up by TUSLA, and it explains everything about fostering. And what I love about it, it's very user friendly, and it asks a lot of questions that people would be thinking in their heads, and you just click on and hopefully they'll get the answers.
And we'll remind people, obviously, the whole purpose of this is to try and get more people into fostering, fostering.ie. And Callahan is a foster carer. Foster carer for nearly 18 years now, Anne.
Yeah, I am.
And you fostered...
Myself and my husband, Charlie.
And you fostered over 20 children over that time. Yeah. Is it a mixture of sort of, you know, maybe emergency placements, mid to long term?
Yes, yeah. We've nearly covered all gambits at this stage. We've done respite placements, short term placements. We've had children maybe just for a week, we have a long term placement at the moment. We've a sibling group that are with us now 10 plus years, you know. Wow. So they're like our own children. And we still get asked to do the odd.
Yes.
We still get phone calls about the odd replacement where sometimes we take a placement where TUSLA mightn't have a placement for them, but they're maybe assessing somebody, or they have a couple in mind and they're waiting until the assess. So we would maybe take in the placement until their proper placement is ready and things like that.
It's a wonderful gift to be able to give a child, to provide that safe, secure and stable home environment, children and young people as well, for however that long that might be. But you kind of need to go into these things too, and with your eyes wide open, don't you? And yeah. I'm sure that's what Joanne wants as well, because if you are of a certain nature, people are coming into your home, you're going to, you know, be emotionally impacted by them, either their experiences or your bond with them. And is that one of the most challenging parts of being a foster carer for you? Everyone's different, but for you, Anne?
It is. It definitely is. You are opening, you're not just opening up your home, you're opening up your heart as well. And whether children are with you for days, weeks or years, you do become attached, and you always want what's best for them. And yes, when a placement ends or a child moves on, it is hard. There's a grieving process that we all have to go through. But I suppose you need to approach fostering with the idea that you are doing this placement, but they're not your children. You're trying to I kind of think we're trying to, as Joanne said, if there's families in difficulties or whatever, you're trying to provide a safe place for their children with the wish and the hope that when the parents have done what they have to do, that the children can be all reunited again. And although it is a little bit of a loss, when they go back and if everything works out, there's kind of a, I don't know, pride isn't the right
Of course
word,
there is.
but
I think it is because you've had this positive impact on these young people and that family network. I mean, it's what an amazing gift to be able to give them. And I'd be very proud if I were you, to be honest with
yeah,
you.
but I suppose like myself, all of us, we foster, we don't, you know, we wouldn't look at it like that.
Understood.
I just said to Joanne there, we just happened to away. Sunday was a lovely day, and we were down in Clonmany at the beach and all. And I was actually with another foster carer because we've a sibling group and that. And we were sort of just sitting watching them on the beach, just doing splashing in the water, gathering up stones and whatever. And kind of between us, there was sort of six children. And it's lovely just to see them doing something so simple, but without any worries or cares.
Yes.
And that's kind of where the, I suppose maybe the feel good factor comes out of
I
it or
get you.
something. It's just you feel then that yeah, you are doing, I don't like to say job because it's not really it's not a job, but I can't really explain, but
No,
just
I
know
think
there's this.
you've done so in your description. That's explained it. It doesn't need a specific word, because you've painted the picture, and that's wonderful. In terms of the support you get, Anne, do you know what I mean? Do you get good support too in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, we've been very, very lucky. Obviously, when children come into care, they have their own social worker, but we have fostering link workers as well. All foster families have their own link worker who would come out and support us and obviously would keep in touch with us. If we need anything or there's any problems, we would go to our link worker. And because obviously everybody wants this placement to work, because if placements don't work, it's very traumatic on the children. You don't like having to move children too often. And that's actually a big reason why we are looking for more foster carers. It helps the fostering placement team to match children if they have a pool of foster carers. As Joanne said, trying to maybe keep them within their own community or just to some children come in and they have various issues, and there's foster carers that have strengths in that area.
Yes.
And you know, so obviously when they get a phone call about a child, they kind of sit and look at what they have and they try to match as well as possible. But if the pool is small, it just makes it more difficult.
And that's why the matching is very important and why we need a diverse range of foster carers. And if anybody is out there, like we would welcome anyone from any community. They would be very, very
Yeah,
welcome. And
fostering.ie
don't
is the
think you
website.
can't
So
do it.
that's what I'm going to ask you specifically on that, because what happens when we discuss this? People come in like, am I too old? Do I have to be in a relationship? Can I be in a same-sex relationship? Am I too young? So go through that for us, Joanne, and it might answer an awful lot of questions to save people having to get their phones out.
Well, we have foster carers who are same-sex marriages. We have foster carers who are single. We have foster carers, you know, with say a disability. Because all of that assessed, we always try to find foster carers who can match with the child. Like we would like, for example, you know, for example, one place where we don't have enough foster care, we don't have enough, say, from the traveller community, which we would love to see. We would like to see maybe people from different religions, you know, like the Muslim religion, for example, because we want to be able to place children with people with similar backgrounds, you know, so it makes it easier for them that transition into care. So, and the other thing is, because it's not means tested, you know, you don't have to be like if you're not working, but you are able to give a loving home, my God, we would be delighted to have you as well. It won't affect any benefits for anybody if you're on disability. As long as like everybody would be screened, obviously, that is what we do
That's
and
a given,
assessed.
yeah.
But we would love to have a diverse range so that we can match the needs of all the children that we have coming into care.
What kind of financial supports are given to people who would be answering this call and becoming a foster carer John?
Well, they get an allowance, and the allowance is actually to cover the cost of the child. But obviously, you know, we all know how expensive children are, let's face it. So at the moment, if the child is up to 12 years of age, they get an allowance of 350 for the child. And the expectation is that money is spent on
the child. Is that monthly, sorry, or once off?
377.
So is that how off? Is that a once-off payment, a regular payment, sorry, Joanna?
Oh, no, weekly payment.
Okay, good. Okay, just to be clear. And that does not affect any payments that you may be receiving. Preferably your youngest child is in preschool at least. That's because obviously you're busy in any case too. But that's really the only sort of caveat that I can see here. But obviously then the makeup of the house and where the child might stay within the house. But that all could be teased out, can't it, with an initial phone call. I don't want to sort of try and make it complicated, Joanne, because the whole purpose of this interview, this interview is to reach out and see, converse and see what the crack is. I don't want to sort of go, well, that could be a negative, because that's not really what I want to achieve here.
But Greg, can I say and advise anybody who might be interested, there is information evenings information online. There are sessions that you just register and there's no commitment to have to do. So if you go on fostering.ie, you can register and take part and see if it's for you.
Okay, and Anne, you would recommend that initial contact, have the chat and see what the story is.
Exactly. The biggest thing I suppose to need is you need to have a spare room. Mm. You know what I mean? Because they would like the child to have, you know, child to have a spare room. And you were saying about the caveat of preschool children being that little bit older. The main biggest reason for that is, Greg, if you're bringing a child into your home, obviously, and you have children, they become attached to the foster children as well and everything. And if they're moving on, it's very hard for younger children to understand what's happening. Whereas if your children are obviously, say, maybe 5 or 6, you can explain things better to them.
Of course, okay.
So that would be that. But I personally know we've got more from fostering than I'd say maybe we've given. It's kind of made our family, and and that's actually something as well. It's not just you and your husband or your partner or yourself. It's your mums and dads, your brothers and sisters. It's actually, at the end of the day, it's actually nearly the whole family, because obviously you're including these children into your family, and then therefore they're becoming part of a bigger family.
And I suppose nationally, Joanne, you know, and internationally, every country is going to have children that require care. We'd love if that was not the case, but it is the case. So in that context, you know, Ireland can be, I suppose, it can be held up really quite high in the world, can't it, in terms of foster caring compared to our international neighbours?
No, definitely. 89% of our children in care nationally are in foster care. Mm. That is a really, really good figure. And at the moment, like, we have 3,874 foster carers in Ireland, which is really good. And they've opened their home to over 5,000 children nationally.
Amazing.
And they're an amazing resource.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Listen, both of you, thank you so very much.
No, thank you.
Joanne Ryan, Principal Social Welfare, social worker, thank you. And also foster carer Anne Callaghan. You've come across really, really well and easily, well explained. Fostering.ie is the website. We've got numbers here as well. Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Right, okay.
Thank you again.
Okay, it is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. We are heading towards Business Matters, a preview of Business Matters with Chris Ashmore. That is on the way. A caller says, though, I'm a teacher in a school and I've worked with Anne and her family. She's just fantastic and has done fabulous work by providing a safe and loving home for these children with her husband, Charlie. Good man, Charlie. Appreciate it. Well done, Anne and Charlie. Great couple, says Yvonne on Facebook. Greg, could you ask Donegal County Council if they would cut the grass at the end of the Ballyholy Road and Rafoe Farm relief, as you have no view of traffic coming from Ballylecky Road, accident waiting to happen? Okay, well, it wouldn't, you could say it, there's contributing factors. Does that make it or make it not an accident? Enoch Burke, how long does Greg think that Enoch Burke should stay in jail in comparison to other crimes? It is, it's nothing. Well, firstly, it doesn't really matter what I think, but secondly, I don't know how long someone should stay in jail if they continue to be in contempt of court. I don't know, or ignoring a court order. what it, how, if we get to a point whereby there becomes a sentence for, i.e. a time-limited sentence for ignoring a court order, then the court order then becomes a time scale rather than it being open-ended. There's very few people would be ignoring court orders or refusing court orders for that long. I often turned off the sound on the TV and listened to Micheál on the radio. Unfortunately, you can't do that anymore because of time. Like, oh, you can. I do it really quite successfully, to be honest with you. You can often pause your TV and put it with a smart speaker, and then you can pause the smart speaker until it catches up. I listen to Highland when I'm not at a game. I listen to Highland and I watch it on the telly because you can pause, or you can. I find that I can get them in sync pretty well, unless it's highlights. Okay, Chris Ashmore joining us after these.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the local enterprise office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
And it's a very good morning to Chris Ashmore. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Very well.
Good stuff. Business Matters podcast is live for you on our website very shortly. You'll be able to listen to it on Sunday. We'll tell you more about that after we get some news. And Aldi actually saw this email come in during the week. It's good business, actually, to let people know what's going on. And what are the stats?
Yeah, well, this, I suppose, shows the impact that Aldi have had since they came to Donegal, and Lidl also have made a big difference. But latest figures out from Aldi, 24 million customer visits to Aldi stores last year. They have six stores in the county. They employ 145 people. And the wage bill here in Donegal was €4.5 million for last year. And they also have sourced over 11 million euros worth of locally produced food and drink from Donegal-based suppliers, so that's good. Amongst the people they have long-term contracts with are the drink manufacturers Mulrine & Sons in Belbuffet and the Donegal Rapeseed Company. And every year they're always looking for people to get involved with them. I think they have a competition on
about bread,
yeah. And, you know, so that's all happening. So, they've become a household name.
Yeah, for sure. Doing well. Now, obviously, you know, a lot of people are in employment at the moment. There are perhaps more jobs than people are available, which means people are getting headhunted, Chris.
Yeah, it's strange times that we live in. A lot of employers looking to fill vacancies, and FRS Recruitment, which is an Irish recruitment agency, they've carried out a survey. And it found that 2 in 5 people in Donegal say they have been headhunted in the last 12 months. About 4 out of 10 in Donegal also believe that changing jobs is the best way to secure a wage increase. And 1 in 2 people in Donegal feel that they're more likely to progress in their career by moving jobs. There's all sorts of stats here, Greg. I could go on. Majority of employers in Donegal say they are concerned about the economic outlook, 73%. And interesting, 1 in 2 employers in the county in the survey are currently hiring for staff, which just shows the times we live
52%
in.
52% of businesses looking for staff at the moment. Big milestone for Donegal Creameries.
Yes, Donegal Creameries celebrating its 125th anniversary, and the state-of-the-art milk processing plant in Killigordon. It's seen enormous changes since it was established way back in 1899. Yesterday, there was a special event to mark the occasion, and there'll be more on that on the farming news and views on Thursday after the 5 o'clock news. Interestingly, Greg, Killigordon, it's one of the biggest liquid milk plants in the country. Now, wait till you hear this. It produces 140 million litres of milk every year. And that's impressive. But 25% of all liquid milk consumed in the Republic of Ireland, that's milk going to the shops, home deliveries, businesses, that's coming through Killigordon.
Remarkable.
1/4, you know, so it's taking in milk from counties all over the northwest, including in the north, 270 dairy farmers And of course, it's a pretty much a 24/7 operation.
Now, obviously, the pilots, Aer Lingus pilots strike begins today. They have their work to rule and an all-out stoppage on Saturday. It's very disruptive. Much of the focus, as you can understand, is the Vox Pops in Dublin Airport. It's the outbound traffic, you know, the summer holidays and all that kind of stuff. But there is a significant potential impact too in terms of inbound traffic at what is starting to become now the peak tourism season.
Yeah, well, we're all concerned about us getting to Spain or wherever for a bit of sun, but coming the other way, as you say, Michael Magner, he's president of the Irish Hotels Federation. He's calling on both parties in the dispute really to get together as quickly as they can, sort this whole thing out, because as you can imagine, there's hotels all over the country that they could be American tourists, they could be French, Italian.
The golfers apparently are being disrupted by it. And that's a big moneymaker for us up here in the
Northwest. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, if a incoming tourist, if their holidays messed up this year, they mightn't come back again, you know.
And the problem is the pilots and Aer Lingus are so far apart, and then AIG are in the background, and it's going to be a tough one, I think, to resolve, because there's a domino effect. If they concede to the pilots, there's very important people, the air staff, the I can't remember what they're called.
Stewards,
exactly. Yeah. Then there's the ground staff, and, you know, if they're opening the wallet, Aer Lingus opening the wallet. And then, of course, they've got AIG saying, you know, you're operating at around about a 9% profit. Now you chew into that. We're not going to invest in you. We're going to invest in another group. So AIG are importing airplanes, and they decide where they go. And then Aer Lingus is stuck with the older planes, which means that they use more fuel and the profit gap narrows even further. And it's a quandary, one I would not like to resolve. Maybe that's why the Labour Court says, all right, lads, you have a month. We're not getting involved.
Well, I was listening to Willie Walsh, a former pilot. He's the head man in AIG, the group that Aer Lingus are part of. And, you know, he was pointing out that as things stand already, that the Aer Lingus pilots, vis-a-vis their counterparts in other Iberia and British Airways, are pretty well paid already. And as you say, you know, the knock-on effect, this, you know, the whole future of Aer Lingus, this is going to be a very, very
I've no doubt it's a very important job. Look, we put a lot of faith in these pilots. But, like, in this day and age too, and they're dressed up like sometimes they're making fish fingers or something, and I'm not in any way denigrating them, but they are driving Airbuses at this stage. Do you know what I mean? Like, and to look for a pay increase that brings you up over €300,000, I don't know. I have sympathy for any workers. They seem to be all rewarded, though, but who's to say? Right, okay. You aren't going to sort it out. Let's talk about this week's podcast. Who's on it?
Yes, firstly, Letterkenny man John Logue. Now, he's Chief Executive Officer of Social Enterprise Republic of Ireland, or SERI. Now, this is a national representative body for social enterprises, which are essentially non-profit-making groups, but they play an invaluable role in communities, and he believes there should be more support given to them the way that we support businesses, and he feels there's great scope for considerable more employment as well.
We need to treat social enterprises as businesses, and every support that's open to a private enterprise should be open to social enterprises. So that's really, you know, from an advocacy perspective, that's the thing that people are going to be hearing us, or sick really hearing us talk about over the next couple of months, in the context of the policy, in the context of the budget coming up, and probably in the context of a general election. If I was to almost give one wish over the next couple of months, it's that government and stakeholders in the sector listen to that message, that any support that's open to a private business should be open to a social enterprise, and that goes without saying.
And social enterprises do employ a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I think the last count, there's about 80,000 people working in the social enterprise sector in Ireland. So that's roughly about the same as the primary agriculture sector in the country. And there's a further about 70,000 people volunteering in the sector too. But our sense is, and this is what we've called for in our pre-budget submission, that the sector is probably underperforming in terms of the number of jobs that it can create. So we think with a little bit of government support in this budget and budgets over the next 10 years, we can probably create another about 52,000 jobs in this sector.
More from John Logue in that interview on this week's Business Matters podcast. Also on the show, Chris?
Yes, I've been speaking with Tony Forrester, Chief Executive Officer of Letterkenny Chamber, about the Letterkenny Chamber Business Awards. They take place later on in the year. And I've been speaking to her about the application process, how it's all evolved and changed over the years as well.
You know, we change them each year, or we change some of the categories each year, just to kind of shake it up a little bit, and also to work to our strengths in terms of our work to our business strengths, you know, to the ones that are really popular, and to celebrate even more some new things like sustainability and disability inclusion and things like that. We try and bring those ones in to celebrate what businesses are doing. So we launched at the end of May, and we'll leave the awards open. We're going to extend it now for 2 weeks, but we'd love people to get them in as soon as possible. So basically, it's very easy. You find a category that suits a business, and you answer 4 questions, essentially, about in the category. And a business can enter as many categories as they want. We do a Zoom call with every business that applies. And then we shortlist with our judging panel around September, and then start the countdown then to the awards in November.
All right, Tony, and it's always a great night. Tony Forrester there, who is the CEO of Letterkenny Chamber, and that's the Letterkenny Chamber Business Awards, which are upcoming. Longer interviews with both Tony and John on the podcast. Is that available now?
Yes.
You upload it on the Wednesday, don't you? Okay, it's up, ready to go in the listen back section. And if you want to listen to it on the radio, of course, it's on after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Yes, it is.
That's correct, yes.
Can't be interrupted.
On the wireless. Football.
On the wireless, okay. How cute. And also, if anyone wants to contact you, Chris,
email, you can email me on businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
And we were talking last week about brown sauce, and it's stuck with you, that, Chris, hasn't it?
I
was saying, for me, it's brown sauce and sausages, red sauce and bacon. And then we had a deep dive then into your childhood.
Yes. Yeah. No. I think
the lack of brown sauce in your childhood. Yes. Chris.
What you grew up? Maybe about same goes to what sport you're sort of most aligned with. Look, you're influenced by the things.
But as a fully grown adult, you can go into a supermarket and pick up brown sauce and have a taste of it.
Yeah, I might have to try it.
Have you ever tried brown sauce?
I have had it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little
kind of hang on. I've had it out in restaurants. Yeah. I've been there, and it's there, and I've had a little bit to taste it. But no, I'll be the tomato sauce.
Does it matter what brand of tomato sauce it is?
I think you get used to it. We used to go for the most well-known one.
The Heinz.
And then we ended up with the own brand label, which at the beginning, there was a difference, but I've got used to it.
I think Chef and Heinz are the two big brands, aren't they?
They would be, yes. Yeah.
But own brand red sauce.
What about, we didn't get on to last week, do you eat mushy peas with your fish and chips?
No, don't understand that at all. Disgusting. I've tasted them, don't like them.
We're on a roll now. Marrow fat peas.
What are they,
Bachelors,
green?
With a little tablet and...
No. I'd have a tin of peas, but I don't want the sauce. So, the processed peas?
Yeah,
I'll take a spoon.
Yeah.
I don't want the liquid, sorry. Yeah. Nice with sponge.
Processed? I thought you had a vegetable patch. You dug them fresh. No,
don't have a vegetable patch. I wish
Yet.
I had. No, it's not. That's not on my horizon. No, I'm not getting an allotment, Chris. No, I'm going to resist it. I want to support our local farmers, so I'm not going to do it myself. How's that?
Greg's Farm Shop.
I can stop along those lines. Chris, lovely as always. Thank you so very much indeed. I do appreciate it. Chris's podcast live now on our website, live on the radio after 6 on Sunday. Take care, Chris. See you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
If God spares us. We were down at Pink last Friday, down to Dublin, to the Aviva. First time in the Aviva watching something that wasn't sport. A bit of a handling, I'm not going to lie to you. And I haven't tallied up how expensive it was either. But just driving down, hotel, taxis, blooming expensive. And it can discourage people from going to the big shows in Dublin. It shouldn't. It discourages me anyway. Wicked is on. It's a spectacular multi-record-breaking touring production of Wicked. It's back at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre Dublin. Features Oscar and Grammy Award-winning music, and Highland Radio are going to take you there trouble-free. You can join us, if you wish, on the 9th of August. That's not far away, as we take part in the magic. And your place includes luxury transfers. You leave the car here, don't have to worry about it. How much is a hotel in Dublin? You don't have to worry about that, because you get an overnight stay in the 4-star City North Hotel in Dublin, and you don't even have to worry about getting your ticket, because we've got that for you. It's €249 per person sharing for all of that. To book, you can call us now on 91 25,000, 91 24,000, or go to the outlet on highlandradio.com. I spent considerably more than 204. When I say we did considerably more than €249 per person. So a good option. In relation to gambling, about 30 years ago, I had family members who had issues with gambling. We stayed with them and eventually got them the help that they needed. But I feel strongly that these gambling machines should be done away with. There was a time that Councillor Eddie Fullerton had plans to make them abolished in Donegal. Unfortunately, after his death, those plans were lost, and we now have the social epidemic of gambling that we've today in the Northwest. We've treatment centres full and councillors who have too many clients to cater for. He foresaw that and did his best to stop it, but no one was interested in pursuing it. I seem to remember that at that time. Actually, just referring to Dublin trip again, relating to that, we had a situation whereby I was walking past a casino, you know, with all the usual stuff, the darkness and all, and exactly next door to it was Mabs, which I thought was, I don't know, by accident or design or on purpose or whatever, but I thought it really quite telling that you have this facility here that, you know, I mean, you're going in and you're probably going to empty your pockets, if the truth be told. You'd have to be really show real self-control not to. And right next door, the money and advice budgeting service. I just thought, what's going on there? Greg was talking to the owner of the Donegal Donkey Sanctuary. 98 abandoned donkeys are being cared for there. But they then go on to say that there is an event being advertised in Donegal. It's a donkey derby event, an event where donkeys aren't treated as well as they should be. Greg needs to ask the question, why have a donkey derby at a summer show? I don't know exactly where that is or what that is about. And I'm not really sure if I don't know enough about it. But if you want to tell us more, email or contact the show. And that's where we are leaving it for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much for listening back overnight, if you are. Or thank you very much for downloading the podcast, which is available from 12:30 every day. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, of course, assisted by Shannon Wilkins. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show tomorrow morning at 9.